Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello. Welcome to our call listing. I am one of your hosts. I am Stuart Witham. My co-host, Christopher Glasson, isn't about for this sunny Saturday afternoon in the Within, where I'm recording a set of intros and outros for this podcast and a couple of weeks afterwards. So Chris isn't about, so I've been left to do it on my own. Pressure's on. I need to deliver. I've got to be good. I've had a shower. I've parted my hair. I've brushed my teeth. I'm going to put some sunglasses on for this. I need to feel like a don for this. I'm going solo. I'm striving out. This is my big moment. Me name up in lights. Numero uno. Head honcho. The big cheese. This episode is with the wonderful Colin Murray. Mate, it's so much easier when you do these podcasts with professional presenters. And Colin's presented on every amazing radio station. He's presented so many great TV shows. So he knows his shit, which makes it a lot easier for us. We recorded this at the Queen of Hoxton. We met Colin. He'd had an interesting afternoon in A&E with his sister. And it looked like it might not happen, but like the trooper he is, he turned up. And he turned up with a bag of chat. And it was cracking. It was a really, really good chat, as you're about to find out. So just before we get on with it, a big shout out to everybody on the Distraction Pieces Network. Owned by Mr. Scroobius Pip. So thanks, Pip, for your ongoing support and for continuing to find new and interesting podcasts and supporting us and helping us do what we're enjoying doing. Big shout outs to Mr. 76 for producing this, for Brad Acton for doing the video bits and bobs, John Harris for doing the little video bits as well for Distraction Pieces Network. Right, a couple of quick bits before we get on as well. I know you generally sort of whiz past the intros and want to cut straight to the gold. Well, I won't keep you waiting. I just want to do a quick shout out to two new podcasts on the Distraction Pieces Network. The first one being Films to be Buried With, by Mr. Brett Goldstein. Brett Goldstein, former guest on Hardcore Listing and former guest on Scribby Swift Distraction Pieces. And if you've listened to either of those, you'll know what a lovely gentleman Brett is. And Brett's new podcast is a good chat, all film-based, as would suggest in the title, where people talk about their favourite films in response to different kind of questions about those. The style of film, etc., etc. And previous guests so far, Catherine Ryan, James Acaster, Pip, and there's some serious names that are going to be coming out on that soon as well. So it's a cracker. And it's not that he needs any more support, because he's absolutely stormed iTunes with this, and rightly so. It's a good listen. So that's available on the Distraction Pieces Network on Acast and iTunes. So big love to Brett. And the other podcast on that is my new one. I'm like a less funny Brett Goldstein, far less attractive. I've got a lisp, But I like nerding out about music. So if I was to be a superhero, that would probably be my skill set. Bit of an irritating lisp. Say too much. And like nerding out about music. So, it's called Off the Beaten Track Podcast. It's a little series of chats that I've done with musicians, actors, producers, anybody kind of in a creative field, and I ask them to select seven songs, which are in a response to seven questions I send them in advance. So we chat about the music that has influenced their journey creatively and the area they grew up in. And so we just do a little life story kind of chat and get to nerd out about music, which I love doing. If any of you have supported it already, and I know a fair few of you hardcore listeners have, thank you so much, because we went straight to number one on iTunes, which in my wildest dreams did not think would happen. So thank you so much for anyone that supported it so far. And if you haven't, give it a listen. Off the Beaten Track Podcast, again, on the Distraction Pieces Network, available on Acast and iTunes. Back to today. Let's stop waffling, Stu. Colin Murray, what a dude. Just enjoy. I'll see you at the end. It's a drunken soiree in the Within. Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listing, the podcast.
Hello, welcome to Hardcore Listing with myself, Dr. Feelgood, and Roy Tarmac.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, mate. How are you?
I'm all right. We've just had an egg mayo sandwich each, which was all right. I think it was the poshest one. I've never eaten in Pret before.
So, Pret veggie.
Yeah, there you go. Ain't got many of them in Essex.
You walked in some other place first, and you was like, "No, this is too Shoreditch." Out of there, and then we nearly bought a can of soda for £6.50, and we decided against it, didn't we? And we're here now in the basement of the Queen of Hoxton, mm-hmm. with our wonderful guest today. Would you like to introduce them?
Yeah, Colin Murray. How you doing?
I can't believe Tarmac here thinks Pret's posh. it's the not posh one. Yeah. 99.
Is it not?
Well, it's 99p for a filter coffee. It's where people like where Irish people like myself and homeless people go for coffee.
Shoes from Grays. It's just another rung down on that.
I don't understand if you like Soho coffee. Oh, I'm not paying £4 for it, whatever it is. But Pret.
There was a news agent's next door, though. It was ridiculous, wasn't it? A can of soda was £6.50.
Do you know it's a good question to always ask people, what's posh? Because you get a really good sign of sort of where they're coming
from.
Yeah,
their spectrum.
Because okay. I've earned decent money in my career, but posh to me is always Walls Viennetta.
Right.
So we only had it at Christmas.
Yep.
Sure. So even now, if I hear that slice, you know, the knife going
the crack,
through the Viennetta,
the crack.
I'm like, this is how I'm living.
Yeah.
And Schlurs, you remember the grape juice?
Oh, yeah. Schlurs. Because mum and dad would be Christmas, and mum and dad would be like, go easy on the Schlur.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't just be bashing that back left, right, and centre.
Schlur and bottles of Appetizer. And Orangina. Mm. That was just like premium level.
Oh, wow.
And that was like, maybe, if you was on holiday, you might get one of them. But the thing was, I remember as well, and we'd go to the video shop and like we'd get a video out, and I was about to get whatever it was out on VHS, and we'd get home. But in the video shop, you'd be allowed to pick a bar of chocolate, but that was capped. It was like, it was, you know, bottom end. It was like Mars Twix, Mum Chocolate, Premium, Mintola, Munchies.
Mintola.
Which they two things about that. Mentola's lost everything when they changed the name to Mint Munchies.
Did they?
Yeah, that's when they, and then no one bought them after that. So I'm like, well, what are you doing that for?
Yeah.
It's like Jif, Sif.
Yeah.
That type of stuff. Bubble fruits and all
unnecessary.
That. Starburst. But you're so right about Orangina, right? And anyone listening to this on the age of 25 is going to be, what are you old men talking about? But the only holiday I had as a kid that wasn't just to see family in Winchester was France. We got Lorne Stranraer ferry, drove from Stranraer to Winchester, stayed a night with the family, then drove to Portsmouth, then got a ferry to Le Havre. It was the worst 4 days of my life, right? And then we got there, and then we had like 4 days in France, and then had the journey back. But I remember getting Orangina in that holiday and going, what is this?
Yeah.
What is
it's an elixir, especially if you've had a rough journey, man. But that bottle just felt like, it felt expensive, didn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
And you had to put a bit of work in with an Orangina as well. You didn't just get to drink it. You had to actually shake it before you drank it. And the adverts, you had to invest into it.
And the adverts in the 80s for like Perrier, that was like, that was something. And it was like, what is this? And it was like, well, it's water. But it looked premium. Oh, and it was like, and it had bubbles in it.
Council Spring, that's all we drank. We used to call it that. You want a glass of Council Spring?
Have you seen that Limmy sketch where he's like, he's in a supermarket and he's like, look at this. And he's going through all the different waters. He's going, £1.50, £2. And he's like, follow me. And he just walks it up into someone's random house and then just goes up to a tap and turns it on. He goes, what? And he just invites all his mates around and they're drinking it out of saucepans and shit like that.
Brilliant.
And it cost fuck all.
Right, Colin, before we get on to what your top five is going to be,
did
you consider any other top five before you settled on what you've settled for?
Well, I'm a spontaneous person, right? Okay. And so I got the fucking message and I'm like, right, I'll do this. And then it was set. And I think it might... We'll see at the end of this, but it might fall under, it was a good idea at the time.
Okay.
It might go on that list. But it's not often someone says, do you anything you want?
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay. And this was in my head. I'd watched something. It was a run-up to the Eurovision, and it was in my head. And then this one thing was it. Don't worry, it's not Eurovision. And this one thing was in my head, and I thought, actually, I can think of three things it was at. I could talk about two things that I think I could add in. Mm-hmm. So, no, I'm that type of person, you know? Like, yeah, be a good idea.
The idea came and you were like, that's it. Yeah, nice.
Jump off a bridge and then think later.
So what is your top five then?
Can I just say, if you're not a sports fan, don't worry. The conversation's not going to go there. So it's great sporting crowd sing-alongs.
Okay.
Five that I think are good to talk about, not just for what happened on that day, but also in general.
Yeah.
I think it'll lead to other conversations.
Man, certainly.
But what do people normally do? I mean, like, is that weird?
Not at all.
No, I mean, like, we always say that people should just go with something that they really give a shit about and enjoy it.
Yeah.
So people get really niche. Like, we had Mark Moore from Essex Express who did his favourite soundtracks to movies, but they were all movies. Some of the movies he hadn't even seen himself, and they were all sort of like strange.
It was all like French erotica, circa 78. It was.
Yeah.
That's the problem. I sometimes listen to things where people have to pick things, and I think, is that really what you like? It's like you go to someone, what's your five favourite movies?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they go, right, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, I'll go with Three Colours. No, not the three coolest, the five coolest movies.
Yeah, yeah.
What are your favourites?
Yeah.
And if you actually think about that question, like The Wizard of Oz is one of mine.
Because
I've seen it so many times.
Yeah.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is one of mine. Yeah, yeah. I've seen it so many times.
Yeah. We done this and we was like, right, let's just be fucking honest. And I was like, do you know what? When I was 12, I watched the first Police Academy film about 300 times. I'm having it.
Yeah. Well, the story of why we started Hardcore Listing, we were trying to think of what to do as a podcast off of doing ones with Pip. And, you know, I've always loved listing things. And one of my stories is... my dad had a big chat with me just when I finished uni, and I'd done all right. And I got to the point where, because I'd done well enough, I was just taking a piss and I was smoking weed at left, right, and centre in front of everyone, because I figured, well, they all know I can get all right grades now, so no one's going to have a problem with it. And my dad like sort of like cornered me just after I'd finished smoking this joint outside, and he gave me this hour-long chat about what I was going to do with my life, and I was nodding all the way through it, but I just wasn't really paying much attention. I went upstairs, came down a little bit later, picked up a notepad and pen. I think my dad must have thought, oh, he's really like getting into it. Went back upstairs, came down a few hours later, and he was like, well, you know, what have you done? You made any decisions? And I was like, yeah, yeah. And he was like, well, what? Go on then. And I was, Ghostbusters is my favourite movie. What I've been doing is writing and categorising movies, and it just turns out that's the most fun one, so fuck it, you know.
He should have smashed you for that, by the way. Well, should have smashed you for that.
Well, we've seen your list, and we know that that football does feature, and obviously a lot of people know that you're a huge football fan. So we've got to throw it out there now.
Yeah.
Like, you're not a massive football fan, are you?
No, I mean, like, I thought Match of the Day 2 was a sequel to a movie I hadn't seen. So, yeah.
Shit, one. When I was hosting it.
Well, I've... I dipped out, and I was, and I literally spent about 2 hours in my shed in my garden last night trying to find a bit of vinyl for you, because I know you give your guests vinyl.
And at home?
And
I do that a lot, yeah.
And I love that.
Usually when I've forgotten about my present and I'm like, oh, fuck it, and they're coming around my house and I'll just take one of my own. Did that with Adam Peaty. I give him, like, I've got the NWA straight out of Compton's. I ask my own copy. sometimes I forget and then I go into that, yeah. Sometimes it's for real, though.
And I thought, right, I'm going to get the perfect bit of vinyl, which will spark conversation, because it was when I stopped following football.
Right.
And as a Liverpool fan, it was probably not the greatest point in Liverpool's career.
Yeah.
And it was, I stopped watching football at the 89-90 season.
Yeah.
89-90 season. And I bought We're Back Where We Belong by the Arsenal League winning side on 7. And it's Dixon, Rocastle, Thomas, they're all on the front. And I thought, I'm going to dig that out and I'm going to give that bit of vinyl to Colin. And could I find it yesterday? I literally went through about 3,000 7-inch singles trying to find this record that I've never played.
I'm so glad you didn't. It's interesting because I went on to work with Perry Groves, who, I mean, it's an interesting one actually, because I've always had a little bit of a liking for Arsenal, because even being young at that stage, kind of understanding what that season was about, and it was the weirdest season ever, obviously, because everything was delayed because of Hillsborough, and this game happened, and Arsenal had to come to Anfield, and then it's up for grabs now, Michael Thomas scores a winning goal and all that, but like, I remember them giving flowers to the cop. You know, I remember that before the game, and I've talked to Perry about it, and he said, you know, it was very much a case of, like, until 1 minute before kickoff, it wasn't about the football, but for that 90 minutes, it was only about the football, and even how they celebrated at the end. So I always joke about, Perry used to, like, once a week would wear It's Up For Grabs Now t-shirt, like, you know, but it doesn't sting as much as other defeats for various reasons.
But that's weird you say that, because Perry Groves was not a player that I probably would have thought of when I think about that moment and Arsenal. But my uncle, I had an uncle that I didn't see very often, and he had a Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
No one had Rolls Royces.
He was the rich member of the family.
And he was
over a bar of Twix, wasn't he?
But he had a Rolls Royce, and I was like, what does he do? And he's like, oh, he's the chairman of a football club. And he was the chairman of Colchester.
Oh, wow.
And so we used to go to Colchester United, like, maybe once a month he'd pick me up.
Nice.
And I was probably about 8 or 9, and we'd sit in the stand, and I'd get a blanket for my legs, and like, and they'd bring me, like, a hot chocolate. And Perry Groves was...
Of course, was
a Colchester.
That's right,
Yeah,
Steve Lamacq's team.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So the only time I've been is with Steve Lamacq. He'll take you to a random away in once every couple of years and just complain for 90 minutes about how bad his team are.
So, yeah, my knowledge of football, I'll give you a little kind of insight. So I was an Arsenal fan till 89, 90. Then I kind of got into being in bands and music and stuff like that. And then I couldn't afford to go after that. It was about £8 standing clock in then. And I think that was the season, I believe, it went all Seater as well.
Yeah.
I might be wrong, but he's there or thereabouts.
It was that time, everything started to change over that period. We should make a rule then. Like, if you are like, I'm bored with this chat, then we change it, right? Because you're like, right, okay. So you can be the listener.
Okay.
You can literally be like, Claxon, no.
Right, I'm having that. Lovely.
Okay. My only thing is, right, with five is like, what order do you do them in?
Well,
are they in... Yeah,
burning number one. If there's one that you always think, when you thought of this, it was there, and you're like, "Fuck it, that's got to be number one."
Yeah.
The others don't have to be in order. Some people who do this, they won't have any in order.
Yeah.
Some just know that what their number one is. Other people have listed it.
Okay.
You know, so however you want to do it, mate.
All right, I'll keep my favourite the last. So I'll start. Why don't I start with the weirdest one?
Okay.
There's a football club called Bohemians, and they're a Dublin football club, and they were having testimonial, players finished to come along, everyone pays in. So it was absolutely bunged for Kevin Hunt, one of our players, legend for them. And so they adopted Hold Me Now by Johnny Logan as their anthem, and they would sing it mainly at away days. So at halftime of Kevin Hunt's testimonial, Johnny Logan, 20 years on, almost a day of winning the Eurovision, comes out and over the PA sings Hold Me Now. Right, to these 3,000 fans, and it's the most bizarre. And just if you're thinking this is why, just watch it now, right? Yeah. Just watch it now. It's the single most surreal sing-along I've ever seen. It's not. They've just adopted this song. It's a Eurovision winner.
Do you know what the thinking was behind them?
I don't know. I just see they're not my team. It's like, this is the only one on the list that is retro. Someone went, you got to watch this. And I was like, oh my Lord, this is the best thing I've ever seen. It's just not suitable for a crowd. It's like if a team said, oh, we sing Boris Gardner, I want to wake up with you. It doesn't make any sense. It's absolutely amazing.
Because the verse is quite slow, isn't it?
Yeah. That's the thing. It's touch me the way you used to do, because I know tonight will be all I'll have with you. From now on, you'll be with someone else instead of me. It doesn't make...
It makes the chorus that much better, doesn't it?
It's amazing. And the crowd singing it, they are ecstatic singing along to this. And it shouldn't work, but it is one of the greatest crowd sing-along moments in sport, and it's got that bit as well, which is I hope at last you find what you've been searching for, although I won't be there anymore, and then a high bit, I will always love you, and they're all hands in the air and they're all going mental, and it's literally one of those stands here, you can see the cars parked around the back of it, it's proper, and they are just in a state of euphoria, and Johnny Logan, who looks about three Johnny Logans now, which just happens to all of us, he's just walking up and down the touchline at this testimonial, just belting this song out. And it is genius. And I also love it because randomly I'm a huge Eurovision freak. So I've watched it every since I was born, sat with my mum, score all the different countries, pick the winner almost every year. I'm not boasting, but this year it was like Israel done money, printing money that was this year. It was the only Eurovision entry. Yeah. It was only one. Mm. So despite... sort of, if someone goes to me, who's your favourite artist that I've ever walked out? Nick Cave first. You know, Tom Waits, Flaming Lips. Mm-hmm. I have Bardo One Step Further on 12 Inch.
Do you know what,
right? Because One Step Further on it could have been there.
Just a pop gem.
It is a gem.
Liar. And it was like, they were like a poor man's dollar.
Well, but it's interesting because I saw it the other day on the telly and I was thinking, you were the two that were just a bit too dirty to get into Box Fizz. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You were just two Wetherspoons to get into...
Definitely,
Right? And you say, she's naughty, he's got the old blonde hair. I think, you're right, pound shop dollar.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, pound shop dollar.
Well, interestingly...
a pound shop dollar is technically twice dollar, so that does it. Or is it anymore? It's probably not.
Well, where I live in Grays... the MP for Grays, who ran to become the MP in the recent elections, was David Van Day from Dollar.
But he used to run a burger van in Brighton and all
that. He got spotted, didn't he? And it was front page of the papers. David Van Day in a burger van.
But I have never been to the Eurovision. It's my bucket list, and I nearly went this year.
Oh, I'm surprised, mate.
I've never been
that much of a fan.
Well, I know. It's just something I've never done.
Do you want to be in the crowd?
Oh, yeah. There. Always in the crowd. Never. You know. It's interesting when you work in the media, when you want to go something to the media people, do you want to go? Well, there's no other way to go. You're either working or you're not.
Yeah.
And nearly went to Portugal this year, and I didn't. But I'm kind of glad I didn't anyway. But our entry, Suri, had her mic taken off her by some
I never saw
idiot.
This, but I heard about it. It was dark, wasn't it?
And it's not that good a song, but it helped her in a way, because then she got the mic back, and she was shaking a bit, and she belted out the last verse and chorus. But I love it because it's just the most eccentricity is being drained away from everything now. You know, even football crowds and people sitting their hands until the first goal scored in most games. And comedy, the mainstream of comedy now, and that's sort of a lot of eccentricity has been taken away from that. You have to search music as well. You know, bands can't make three albums now.
Yep.
They'll be dropped after one. People won't come, so many TV series that you'd live in your hearts were awful after one series, or no ratings after two, but the third one, like Only Fools and Horses, is the best example of that. There's no time for that now.
Yeah.
But somehow the Eurovision, they've tried their best to mess it up. Half judges, half audience, all that. Break up with the Soviet Union, that didn't help because they don't vote for each other. But somehow it survives. It survives as this... there's nothing really that... You know, it's... the Ukraine enter a song that is just woeful, you know what I mean, against Australia in it at the moment, like her Australian, it continues to be just woefully brilliant. But it is as bad as it's good. It's as terrible as it's genius.
Yeah, man. Terry Wogan used to just make it for me. He just got me through that. Because my mum just got
pissed the whole way through it. You know. He started sober. Welcome to the Eurovision. And then by the time it got to you, he's like, oh, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. And Graham Norton's carried that on. Like, it's an impossible challenge after, because you're right, it was all by Terry Wogan. But I think he's brilliant. There was the worst 6-minute video at the interval of this year's one. And it was awful. It was the history of Portugal losing the Eurovision from like when they won it, like whatever it was, 57, to when they won it last year. And it was showing little clips of their entry and all. And it was just awful. And it got to the end, and Graham Norton just went, 600 million viewers. And just moved on. And that was a Wogan. That was a Wogan moment. You know, he's got that. Naturally, he's like that. So, but seems to need an Irish voice. I'm just putting that out there in case Graham hangs up the microphone.
But... To go back to Johnny Logan.
Legend, won it twice, don't forget.
It's a solid tune, though, isn't it?
It's a brilliant tune.
It is a solid tune. And that bit that you said, the third chorus, where he does the elongated like vocal, but then it overlaps the chorus, but the fans are already doing the chorus, and it is beautiful. Mm. I'll message you to say, like, my bottom lip is actually going watching this.
You've watched it, haven't you? Yes,
I've watched a lot of variants of it as well, because there's, apart from the one where he walks up and down
that's
the touchline.
That's my favourite, but the crowd one's
it's
good.
It's lovely, but the crowd one's
I think it's as well, it's like, you know, it's 3,000, and I'm one as well, so I mean this is a kind thing. It's 3,000 Hallians singing along to a love song that there's no connection to football, and it's brilliant. Brilliant. And that's sometimes what sport can do. It can make you absolutely lose your mind. Yeah. Ireland won the Eurovision, had a run of winning the Eurovision because they're the most successful Eurovision country ever. They had a run where they won it, and they had they were deliberately put the worst entry in the world because we can't afford to host it anymore because it cost millions to host the Eurovision. There's not even much money, so Ireland were deliberately putting in shit entries to try and lose it. But I'd love to enter. I'd love to. I think it'd be brilliant. Like, you know, Britain haven't won it in so long. I'm pretty
it got a bit political, really, didn't it? Did it?
Well,
not like since we decided to go invading more countries? I think they were sort of like they were showing solidarity by voting us down.
Yeah, they don't like us. That's for sure. Yeah. Brexit probably didn't help.
Probably not.
Yeah. I think we need to. I think basically, like, if we put the Rolling Stones in, we'd lose.
Mm. Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter much, you know. But it's quite good being from Northern Ireland because I can sort of be a real glory hunter and watch the first votes come in.
Yeah.
Who's doing better, Ireland or Britain? Come on, Britain. Rule of Britannia. Or it goes the other way. I'm like, Britain. Come on, Ireland. Come on, the boys.
Has there any been any... What acts stand out? The one that I think of the most. I don't know if they won it, but do you remember the Swedish band?
ABBA?
They did the... not ABBA.
Imagine if you didn't remember. You know, Swedish band, two guys, two girls.
I think they've done right.
I hate ABBA with a passion.
Catchy songs.
They're too catchy. Mm-hmm. So if I hear an ABBA song 3 days later, I'm singing it.
Yeah.
I want Pound Shop ABBA, a.k.a. Bardo. No, I can't. ABBA are like a headache.
ABBA played so much in my local clubs as a kid that I just can't. I've got very bad memories of them. You quite liked them, didn't you, mate?
Love a bit of ABBA.
I don't mind ABBA. Like, I think they've just got some proper good pop songs.
Yeah.
And undeniable.
No, they're on my list with U2, ABBA. Yeah, I've got that little.
Do you know what? Right, we've done a live show, didn't we, in Dublin?
Yeah.
And we went over because Pip was doing one, and Pip done this huge one, didn't he? And Blind Boy from other bandits come on his one, and then we done a very, very small one,
we
didn't
did
we?
One but, at
and we was
we were smashed, by
smashed before
days.
We even got on stage. But we interviewed a few people throughout the day, and I didn't realise Bono's the Pox, was that how they refer to it?
Bono's the Pox.
Yeah.
What's that mean?
I know, just from what I gathered from Essex, it was like Poxy. Shit. And how much people didn't seem to like you two in Ireland.
It's a weird one. The one of the reasons I hate them is when I started working in music when I was like 16, 17 as a journalist and then started my own music magazine, the big thing was about local music. It was about like bands coming through.
Can you talk about it a little bit as well?
You get like 40, saying here's your 40 demos of 40 bands that month and 25 of them would sound like you too, and it's understandable. But like that's, you grow a hatred for it because certainly. There's so many people picking up and wanting to sound like them. I've just never liked the music. It's just, I like about 3 or 5. I went to the Pop Mart tour. It was good and all that. And it ties back in, actually, the singing, live music. You can go and see a band you don't like that much. But I defy anyone to stand in front of a stage at Glastonbury when everyone's singing Yellow by Coldplay and not be buzzing. Yeah. Or like seeing U2 and everyone's singing Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For. It's that community of singing. You get 3,000 Bohemians fans. You know, at a guy's testimonial at halftime, everyone just sing Hold Me Now by John Logan and you'll buzz. You watched it and you'll buzz. You wouldn't own that record. And it's not like a, I suppose it's not a hatred as such. It's just, I just don't like, when bands start singing about world issues, they're gone for me, you know, like some of the earlier stuff's good, but like there's loads of good examples of it, like Coldplay went that way as well.
One of my favourite bands growing up was right from kind of literally Dead Letter Office was R.E.M.
Yeah.
And then kind of...
See, they went that way as well.
Post Automatic. Mm.
And it gets in as well, bands that were on drugs and then weren't, and that's not Coldplay, U2 or R.E.M., but like Saint the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Now, there's a band, when you wouldn't wish it on them, their drug addiction, made some of the best records I heard.
Definitely.
Like Freaky Styley and Mother's Milk.
Them are U2.
Yeah, and then they hit that Blood Sugar Sex Magic. Yeah, but then they became U2. They start writing songs about snow. You know, and that, what was it, Californication, was that album called? That was the Halfway House album. Yeah, and then they went...
After that, it was gone.
Other bands, better off drugs. Primal Scream probably wrote the best music off drugs.
Yeah.
So it's funny how drugs can affect bands both ways, you know. Oasis wrote really bad albums on drugs. You know, it's so funny, isn't it? Like, I don't know. How do we get on this? Johnny Logan doesn't take drugs.
Nick Cave wrote most of his greatest albums on drugs.
Right, exactly. I've got to tell you this about sing-alongs, and it'll tie back in. See, I've got to not take over this podcast because as a presenter...
Colin, it's brilliant. We've had John Kennedy on, we always love a presenter.
And both times it's kind of nice because we can just kind of
sit back a bit.
We've got a professional here, so we can relax.
So John Peel was having a private party to celebrate, I think it was 40 years in broadcasting, it was. And I had not been at Radio 1 that long. But we got on well because he was a Liverpool fan. I was a Liverpool fan. And we just talked about football and really normal things. And actually, when I ended up doing his slot for 3 years, I took everything he taught me into it. And people were like, "You should, first track you played was Queen. And the second track you played, I didn't know." But yeah, John Peel didn't play music based on anything other than he liked it. You know, and it's like, you know, he doesn't get the credit sometimes for the bands that he broke that were huge right through to the end, by the way, like White Stripes, Strokes, all him first. Although if Hugh Stevens is listening to this, he did play the Strokes 2 days before John Peel, and he would be pedantic enough to pick me up on it, so I'm going to mention that, but he was still always there, and he plays happy hardcore, and he loves Status Quo, and then he would, and that's what I loved about him. It was never really about the labels, it was never anybody. Yeah. Anyway, so I get invited along this thing and I go along to it, and it's a room, I don't know where it was because I hadn't been in London that long, and 100 people maybe, and Pulp played, the remaining members of Joy Division played Joy Division tracks.
Wow.
And then on one grand piano, Nick Cave came out, and there was no more than about 50 people in the room at this stage, and I remember Mark Radcliffe introducing it, and he played 4 or 5 tracks on piano, and you could hear this.
That's crazy.
Tapping the beat out. You could hear it up with his left, wouldn't it? Because he was his pedals. You hear him tap his beat out when he's playing Into My Arms, so you're hearing it like that. I don't believe it. It was just...
Colin.
Mind-blowing.
I'm going to sound like a topper, and I'm not trying to top this.
Well, if he's a topper, he's a topper, right?
I'm really not, right? Nick Cave's my favourite.
Yeah.
By a mile. And I saw him at Bush Hall when...
it's not topped it yet.
No.
This is not a top.
No, Jarvis was there.
Yeah.
And that fits into the story. But they didn't play. It was just Nick Cave. It was at a piano, but a couple of the others were there. And it was an album playback for the album of 15 Feet of Pure White Snow. And I sat sadly by her side. And And I just presumed, because when I used to go at these, because do the DJ, and they used to just send you the promos, so it was like, they just used to play the album, and you'd get a few free drinks, and you'd just go, yeah, I really like it. And so I sat by the piano, because there was an ashtray on it, and at the time you could smoke inside, so I was just using the ashtray and sitting by it. And then he'd come out and sat at that piano. And I had like a shitty Instamatic camera. And I was thinking, and he had a brown velvet suit on.
Amazing.
And literally sat where you're sitting and started playing. He started with God Is in the House, right? And I was like, fucking hell, this is a bit special. And there was a couple of like kind of press guys that were just doing the things with the flash cameras. And I was just thinking, I'm going to have to fucking do it, aren't I?
Yeah.
And I've literally just gone and lit the whole fucking building up with my like shitty camera with a big flash.
Yeah. What did he do?
Mute Records. He was cool. Mute Records were like all over me going like, who are you here from? I was like, no, I'm just a crazy Nick Hay fan.
Yeah.
Like, and I was like, and they're like, we need that camera. I said, you're going to fucking have to wrestle it off me because you ain't having it.
Yeah.
And they let me have it. And I've got that.
Amazing.
And him sitting there playing that, God Is in the House.
That has that line, is it Goose Step and 12 Step and Teetotalitarianists? And one of the, Nick Cave has a, you know, sort of a ream of lyrics that you go, nobody else would write that line. And it's funny if you're, I don't know why you two are, would say you're musical, but like I'm not. Right, yeah. I play the ukulele for fuck's sake. Right?
Yeah.
It's like, and I go to lyrics. Anyone I know who's a musician goes straight to the music.
Yeah.
And some of the art, like Tom Waits the same, he has lines that I go, nobody else writes that.
Yeah.
Go ahead and call the cops, you know, meet nice girls in coffee shops. And lines that just stick with me, and Nick Cave's that.
Yeah.
That is it Goose Step and 12 Step and Teetotalitarian. Exactly, he's just got these lines that just go, no one else in the world will write that line.
Yeah.
And I love that. It's like you read a book and you go, nobody else would write that book. But he's one of those, nobody else would. When I was in the daytime in Radio 1, we were the last kind of era, I think, that had our records of the week and a couple of free plays. And it was pretty much a free choice as long as you didn't rip the arse out of it. I remember There She Goes, My Beautiful World. So phoned up and gone, get a radio edit of this because I can have it a single of the week. And I remember at the Q Awards, he was there and I went over and had a quick chat. And we were on air at the time. And I could say, we're on Radio 1. I could see he's a bit like this. And I was like, yeah, but we're playing this. And I put the headphones on him, and it was There She Goes Me Anyway.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
My mate once saw him at a with his kid at SpongeBob SquarePants at, you know, the Christmas, you know, the pantomime or whatever in the theater. Bouncing his kid up and down his knee singing SpongeBob SquarePants songs.
I mean, same up that look.
Be surreal, wouldn't
you? You didn't even see that when you were getting stoned. Your dad was shouting at you.
So when you set up Blank,
yeah,
like, was that a fanzine or was that an actual publication? Well,
it was a magazine. It was set up by myself and a guy called Paul McNamee, he's now the editor of The Big Issue.
Right.
And he went on to work for The Enemy and went there. I was the bullshitter and he was a very talented writer. And it was set up on 800 quid and absolute lies to the Ulster Bank, who gave
what
us a five grand overdraft. I lose track. I think I might have been 19. So it would have been going back to 95, 96. Mm. Yeah, it would have been 96, 97 because we came through the ceasefire. We came through the ceasefire Good Friday Agreement. and we did well. I mean, we were selling 52% of music magazines in Northern Ireland, and that was like 4,000. You know, that puts into perspective, the scene was very, very small. Yeah. And we were putting on unsigned bands, like Snow Patrol, say unsigned, had signed a Jeepster, but weren't doing very well. And we'd run little clubs, and I used to run a club called Stereotype. And we had Looper over, who were like a side project of one of Bell and Sebastian. Yeah. And we'd have spoken word with Terry Hooley, Good Vibrations. And he'd do a spoken word, and then he'd take his glass eye out and put it in his pint glass and drink it. And then we had Desert Hearts, where they, instead of playing, they played a dap machine and just played cards in the stages. It was all just all over the place. And how we get the magazines, I'll never know. And I tell you, I can date it. And if anyone knows this date, they know. The day we went to press for the first issue, so you got to imagine two kids, basically, up the all sorts of no good. It's like 4 a.m, and we're trying to get this magazine ready to send a printer, designing in the old Cork Express or PageMaker 4, whatever it was. And Paul goes, "You gotta come and see the TV." I'm like, "No, we need to do this." We had got a sponsored column by the Parliament, which was the only gay bar in Belfast. It was that type of magazine. It was like a real kind of like, we need to be everything that we hate about this country and love about this country. We want to be everything we love about it. We want to be it really, you know. There is no voice for bands and alternative scenes, and that's what we were. And we sold the sponsorship of a column to the only gay club in Belfast, and then forgot about it until that night. And we were like, "Shit, we need to write a column for this." Right? It was one of those ones that was like, "Absolute, where's that? What did we sell an advert for the back page?" Like, we were never, should never have been run the magazine. And he goes, "You gotta see a TV," and it was Diana had died. So that's how I know when it was. So whenever that was when we did.
So
the
was
magazine.
You still studying at that point, or was
no,
you
mate,
done?
I was. So I passed my 11 plus. We then called 11 plus. I don't know. I had that here. Yeah. Went to grammar school. They didn't want me to come. I did 3 years there, and they were like, "If you come back, we'll suspend you." I don't think they are will expel you. They didn't want it on the record as such, so they were like, "So anyway, so switched okay. to the high school and back in Dundonald."
Why was that? Was your name full?
I never a bad kid, just never shut up.
Yeah,
mischievous. And then went to Dundonald High School, and again just never shut up. But I met a teacher called Mrs. Piper, and she spotted I liked to read, and she was like, "You should be a journalist." And I was like, I've always wanted, as a kid, I wanted to be a journalist. I didn't want to be a fireman or anything. I wanted to write, always write reading. She spotted it rather than kind of shout at me. She looked after it a bit. But even then, I got kicked out. I got suspended 3 months for GCSEs. Then I got back in to do the GCSEs. And then I went YTP scheme, which was the old youth training program, $29.50 a week. And worked at McDonald's. And it got, for some reason, got accepted at the Ulster Newsletter newspaper. And then that was it. So I was writing from 16. Absolutely the opposite of that. It's funny because I've taken 8 weeks off this summer, but for the very reason that I've never had time off. You know, like students go like gap years and all, I've never had it. Yeah. So I'm not working on anything. I've turned down all work connected to the World Cup and all that, and I'm just going to doss about.
What are you going to do? You got any plans?
Me and your dad are hanging out.
I'm going
to Costa Rica for a friendly match. Northern Ireland are playing Costa Rica in a friendly. So I'm going to that. My brother's getting married, so I'm going to that. And I'm just going to doss about. I'm going to do things that I never do because I can't stop. It's a funny thing. It depends where you come from, but I'm only now starting to stop running from the council estate. You still keep thinking, this could go tits up. And especially when you've got like, you know, a B and 3 C's in your GCSEs to fall back on, you're like, You know, I still think, if I die at 90, have I enough money to get me to, I'm not getting another job anyway. I still think like that. So this summer's the first time I ever went, no, just stop working, you know.
That's crazy. You've literally never had time off. You've never been on holiday.
Never. 3 weeks would have been the most time I've ever had off. And then most years, probably over the year, take 3 weeks off maybe. Like a week here, a few days here. I just, work too much.
But aside from that fear of, if I live to 90, am I going to have enough money?
Yeah.
You must enjoy it though.
I enjoy a lot of what I do when it's good. And I get frustrated at it when it's bad. So it's always a balance in this business. It's like, if I could just do radio all the time, that's what I'd do. So I do, say for example, I do the snooker and Eurosport, and a lot of people are like, "Oh man, you're locked in a room for 21 days in Feltham." And I'm like, yeah, it's amazing. It's like a challenge, because it's like, we started with 14,000 viewers and we're up at 400,000, and it's been a real team effort and the people are great. And I work with Jimmy White, who's the funniest man you'll ever meet. We're going to see Rolling Stones tomorrow night. Well, he doesn't know I'm going, but so that'll be good.
Because he's He's good pals with them, isn't he?
Well, Ronnie Wood's a massive snooker fan.
Yeah.
So they have it. I don't know whether they have it tomorrow night, but when they up until recently, certainly for sure, when they go on tour, they have a snooker table. So Keith Richards and Ronnie Wood play frames of snooker, which is the least rock and roll thing you've ever heard, but in a weird way, it's quite rock and roll, this thing. Because a proper snooker table is two bits of slate put together. Yeah. Like, it's properly built for them, so it must, every time they play a gig, they must spend 10 grand just to play a frame of snooker. But I remember Jimmy telling the story where it was like, who wins, Keith Richards or Keith Moon? And he says, Keith Richards or Ronnie Wood? And he goes, a while back there, I was watching them play, and Keith Richard potted a red and a pink and put 15 up, so I think Keith Richards wins. But Ronnie Wood's amazing. I remember he messaged me something like the Northern Ireland Open last year and went, what's the score between Mark Selby and Mark King or something? I'm like, what? So you're like, it's this guy. He loves it, like, absolutely loves it. So yeah, so it's not always like, not always the obvious things that you like. So like, we did match today too, I didn't really enjoy that, because it was quite prescriptive and you were just asking questions for them to answer a question that they came up with. If that makes sense.
It's not a real interview, is it? It's all set up.
So it's kind of a balance, really.
Yeah.
So I did a thing for Radio 2 recently, really enjoyed, and then I enjoyed doing Fighting Talk, but even with that this year, I'm like, right, come on, we need to move it on, do something else with it. So it's, yeah, I do enjoy it. I enjoy radio more because I enjoy the connection. So someone listening to this now, they might be listening going wanker, but radio's different, you know, you listen to it, it's about the connection. If someone's listening now, I hope they haven't listened to the last 6-7 minutes and instead they're talking to their mate about, do you remember we had that Eurovision party? Yeah. Or, do you know what, he's right, do you remember we sang along to that shit band at Glastonbury, but it was amazing, you know. Yeah. And that's what radio is for me, that with nothing written down. Well, I do have the words to Sunshine and Leith in case I get them wrong, and a few other bits, but yeah. That's what I'm addicted to, I think. I also love still writing. I've had a column in the Metro for the last 6 years, and then if that goes, I'll do something else. Because the buzz of going to bed and going, right, they're going to read that tomorrow, and if I fucked up, it's in print. Yeah. I love that buzz.
What came first, music to you, your fascination with music or football?
Yeah, when we grew up, my mum always tells me the first thing I ever said as a full sentence was, I come down from the misty mountain, which was from Comes a Time by Neil Young, song called Human Highway. That album, apparently, I was like addicted to. Whether that's right or not, I don't know. My mum likes to make up stories. but it was always...
I mean, I'd go with that. That's pretty cool.
I like it, though, isn't it?
It's always
grubby fingers on... I always remember grubby fingers on the records, and I always remember more records and TV. And what changed that was me, like grandstand every Saturday, you know, getting up and just watching non-stop that went to bed. But I never remember TV. I remember us having a TV, but I only ever remember me watching it. My ma would watch like the soaps, but I never remember, you know, TVs were on the background.
Yeah.
We were always like, nah, that Jim Croce record's on, or that Rolling Stones record's on, or that Supertramp record's on, or that. So that was kind of it. And then my mum met my stepdad. He brought in his music that he loved, and that was kind of it, and it kind of came together. And then always, and it's funny.
What was that? What sort of stuff was that?
He would have been Jim Croce, actually. I don't know, it's hard to divide them up. I always remember Elton John, Too Low for Zero. I remember playing that, that died. He loved Dire Straits. And even now, I buy vinyl based on, we had that when I was five, we had that when I was 10. And I'll go, I'll buy Too Low for Zero by Elton John, or I'll buy, and I still buy that vinyl, and I don't really listen to it that much. But the thing about vinyl is, what I've rediscovered with vinyl in the last like few years is, some records I hate on CD and love on vinyl. Some records are brilliant to listen to on my phone, and I don't want to listen to thrash metal on vinyl, but like I want to listen to Fleetwood Mac Rumours on vinyl, and the whole record changes. Sound of Silence, Simon and Garfunkel, which is not a big thing growing up, was the sound. And I met when Paul Simon made Graceland, I think I played that broke. But again, you know, like Sound of Silence, different album on record. Any soul record, different album on vinyl. And it's almost like listening to a new band again, you know?
Yep.
So yeah, so anyway, yeah, so growing up, music was always there. Just sporting fanatic, but addicted to the rules. So I can play badminton now and know the rules, although they have changed a couple of times. Or if I play someone table tennis, right now you've got to serve across and it's got. But I was always addicted to that.
Does that make you not very fun to play with?
Colin? I was going to say, that sounds great.
Happy for other people to say. But I never cheat. I've got this thing, I never cheat.
Yeah.
But I'm a stickler to.
Do you know what?
Worst competitive person in the world.
That's probably the biggest reason what always put me off of football was the fouling and the cheating.
Yeah.
Because I think football, and it's in its normal form, is the, one of the most crazily fantastic games you can watch in terms of the sporting achievements that people do in that. But it is the sort of cheating and fouling sort of side of it that just always struggle with. I even remember being on a football pitch, you know, just playing around with my mates and getting fouled or getting pushed off a ball. It'd start a fight because I'd be like, you can't do that. And they're like, didn't care at all.
The thing that is what you said, like it's this crazy game. The reason why is it's set pieces are only used to start the game. So you only have set pieces only exist because the ball goes out of play. Set pieces only exist because somebody's fouled. You need to restart the game and give them the ball back. And that's different. So like American football, for example, everything's a set piece. And although there's a little bit of ingenuity, a little bit of, oh, I can change the play, it's a set piece.
Yeah,
a big baseball fan, everything's a set piece. Yeah. And the only decision is how you throw it and how you hit it.
Yep.
Football's brilliant. A guy gets it and he looks up, or a girl gets it and looks up and goes, option, option, option. And that's why it's an amazing sport. But I struggle at club level now with not just the level of acceptable cheating.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. It's he was touched. Sure. He had every right to go down. And you're like, right, okay.
Well, yeah.
But also the fact that it's at the highest level now, people are turning up to be entertained. You know, whereas when I was growing up, the reason why football was addictive was the roar went up because that was your team. Whether it was going to watch local football, going to watch Northern Ireland, or the Liverpool connection, which we had right back in our family. And it was like, and that's missing now. And I only get that with Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
That's the only place I know of. If I go to there, like going to Costa Rica for maybe 120 people and we'll sing for 90 minutes. I mean, it's, I haven't thought once about the result. We had Germany in the qualifiers and I went to the away game, qualifiers for this World Cup, and we got humped. And I'm 88 minutes into the game. Do you know what? I couldn't even tell you where it was. Might have been Hamburg. I can't remember. Anyway, so that's typical Northern Ireland games. You can't, if you remember the country you're in by kickoff, it's good. I remember 3,000 of us, and I remember how well we got on with the German police. It was amazing. They played our songs through the tannoy speakers on top of the vans that are usually like, please disperse. They were playing Sweet Caroline and all that. And I remember 88 minutes in, we've been humped. We haven't scored. We've hardly touched the ball. And I remember looking around and seeing like 25,000 German fans filming us. And I'm thinking, that's what's wrong with football right now. Mm. You're Germany, and you've hardly sang for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
You're not enthused by this.
Yeah.
Why are you here?
Do you know what? It was really weird. I went to a festival in Germany, Berlin. It was Berlin Festival. This was a couple of years ago. It was Bjork was playing, and Blur was there. It was a crazy lineup. And it was the cleanest festival I'd ever been to. But the crowd just weren't getting into it, and I was gutted. I was like, like Blur's performance and Bjork's, it was the night before, they were absolutely mind blowing. It was absolutely amazing. It was Blur's Biophilia, which is just a crazy record anyway.
Do you know,
and
Josh
the crowd
Whittingham
just weren't getting into it. Yeah,
it's a real time. You know, Josh Whittingham, we did that show Blood on the Tracks Radio 2, and he had to pick his favourite Britpop song, and he picked He Thought of Cars by Blur.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge Blur fan, and I was like, no fucking way. It's not even in their top 30 songs.
That was a fucking too cool for school.
Too cool for school moment.
You know what I mean? I can give you other ones, but I can't give you that.
The cool one you can get away with, the e-pop scene. That's on the level of becoming, all right, don't be too clever.
The answer is modern life is rubbish, by the way.
Advert.
I'll give you my second one, actually, because it is Sweet Caroline by Northern Ireland, and that was at the Euros, and we played in Nice against Poland. It was a terrible game of football, and then we went to play in Lyon. We didn't turn up for the first game. So Northern Ireland, to go back into very much history, everything in Northern Ireland was a product of the Troubles. Football is a product of society anyway, and our society was divided. So Northern Ireland fans, you were generally Unionist Protestant, Republican Ireland fans, genuinely Catholic Nationalist, and you know, football represented a divide, and that was the way it was, just like council estates did, just like schools did, just like society did. And post-ceasefire, a friend of mine started a thing called Football for All, and he asked me to get involved early on, and he was just about, look, we need to make this better. We're not asking everyone to become Bible school teachers. We're just asking it to be better. And he didn't go to professors, and he didn't go to teachers. He went to the fans. He went to those who were singing songs that really we needed to get out of a society. And listen, it's still predominantly a Protestant fan base, but Windsor Park has changed beyond all belief. We're cheeky as fuck, by the way. Like, some of the songs would be just cheeky, right? And there's still, you'll still, you know, we do see a green initiative was brilliant. Everyone liked Bring Green and White, you know, and it's still a team where God Save the Queen's played before. And, you know, they'll still sing a couple of songs, but they're historic songs. Like there's no Billy Boys, there's none of that. And Northern Ireland fans I feel what was happening at Windsor Park was actually happening faster than was happening in our society. So having grown up in a particular area and having been sort of going to Northern Games all my life and seeing the change and seeing the work this guy did and being part of the Football for All, and then just seeing us go to, like, at last, right, nobody, like, if I ask you about Northern Ireland the last 2 years, you could say Arlene Foster, and you're going to say the deal that she did with Theresa May. Good news doesn't travel out of Northern Ireland. It's always been an amazing place. It was amazing humour growing up amongst all the shit. It was amazing people. I remember a guy, Gerry Anderson, my favourite broadcaster of all time. He's dead now, but he was a guy who was always in bands, but joined the band after the good guy left. So he joined a band that Bob Dylan left, and then the band went to shit, and Bob Dylan went. So he's always a real amazing character. He did a show on Radio 4 for 90 minutes a day, by the way, that's how good he was. Brilliant broadcaster. A little bit, maybe people are getting to know it's a good place to go, and it's changed amazingly. But the Northern Ireland fans at the Euros, we won a medal, and like the Paris gave us a medal, the French government gave us a medal for how well behaved we were, and gave it the Republic of Ireland fans. And that is the reality.
Wow.
I remember sitting on the first day we got the Nice, when all the, you know, when the French ultras were kicking off here, there and everywhere. And there was 4,000 or 5,000 people in the street, a couple of thousand us, about 2,000 Poland fans and about 1,000 Republic of Ireland fans, all drinking together, no police. And these French ultras ran in about 30, and we're all like about no trouble, but it's also a hard country. Yeah. Like Northern Ireland's still a hard country, and Irish people, we're not exactly the most level-headed. Add the Polish in there. These guys ran in. It was like someone having a fly in their face. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? And the police were laughing. They just battered them out. Then put all the French soldiers over there and we kept drinking, you know. And we've kind of like, to see us just get the press that we got and see whether it be Republic of Ireland fans or Northern Ireland fans. And we sing Sweet Caroline before games. The credit goes to the Boston Red Sox. It's their song.
Right.
Now you hear it sang all the time now. And this is where I think it happened. We sang it. Card Frampton took it into boxing because he's a Northern Ireland fan, and it was the same crowd. It was the Green and White Army going to see Card Frampton, and then Barry Hearn started using it. Yeah, Barry Hearn started using it at all his things, and I should have had that on my list. Jesus, we might have to add it in anyway. and then it became something that now, when people hear Sweet Caroline, oh God, here we go, sporting event, they're singing Sweet Caroline. It'll never be sang like we sing it. And I was working in inverted commas for TalkSport at the Euros, but the deal was I'm just going to go with my mates and I'll turn up to do the show in whatever stadium in. They were like, okay. And I got to the ground, they went, we've got you a seat. And I said, no, I said I wanted a seat. And they were like, yeah, but I ain't in the stands. I'm like, I said I wanted to be in the stands. I'm like, trust us. And it was a seat at the goalpost for the Ukraine game. So I sat in the second half behind the goal, as in I was the closest person to Michael McGovern, our goalkeeper. In the second half, was closest to the Ukrainian goalkeeper. So I was the closest person to Macaulay when he scored that header, and we won 2-0. Our first game we won since 1982 at a major tournament. And it was all, everything came together, you know. It was like, it was, don't mean to be like overly soppy or cliched, but it is so important to me that people see what Northern Ireland is really like. Yeah. Still now, I think we fight against that. And I love what the Northern Ireland fans have done, and it's not perfect by a long shot, but it is so different. I'm so proud of what's happened. And the Sweet Caroline before that game started, they put it in the PA 5 minutes before, and I was just in floods of tears, just watching it. And it was like 15,000 Northern Ireland fans, and everyone's going to say this, but we make more noise. 15,000 of us make more than 50,000. I've seen it so many times. Welsh fans will say that. They had 2/3 of the stadium in the second round against us, and they'll say that. How did you make that noise? We never stopped singing for 90 minutes. And that moment for me was just like a sort of full stop in a way, or certainly like a real kind of, what's that phrase, not an epiphany, but just a monumental moment in time. Euphoric. For how the Northern Irish fan base had changed from representing one side of a community and having songs that have no place in civilized society, and then to be here singing a Neil Diamond song in front of the world. It was brilliant, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why I think when we didn't get the World Cup and it was a bad refereeing decision, everyone was so caught up about it. It wasn't just about a football match. We've lost more games than we could count.
Yeah.
You know, it's about, well, we would have had that again. We would have had that chance to show the world what we're about, and that was taken away by a shit referee. So, who I hate.
two questions. I want to hear what was that decision, Colin? Because I need you to refresh my memory. How did that go down?
Well, it was he gave a penalty that only one Swiss player claimed for.
Right.
Hit the back of Corey Evans. hands down, everything. It was just never a penalty. And then we had a shot cleared off the line the second leg. We were brilliant in the second leg. It was totally us. And yeah, we didn't get the World Cup. I'm not bitter at all.
Well, go back to a more back to a more happy memory though. Yeah. When you see 15,000 people, like you made the comparison earlier of, you know, you might see Coldplay, and it's you know, challenge anyone not to get caught up. Yeah. And we were joking after Glastonbury last year that two nights on the bounce, I found myself crying my eyes out to bands I didn't expect to, and I was getting all teary for Coldplay. I think there's just that thing of when you see that many people united singing one thing, it's just overwhelming for the senses.
And just because of what it was and now what it is, you know, our other song is. We sing Mine Eyes Have Seen the Glory of España 82 when Little Northern Ireland showed the world what you can do to Michael Izzard later. And we're coming after you, and this is what we sing. We're not Brazil, we're Northern Ireland, and it's all the same to me. But it's all the same to me. And that is us. That's our mentality. We know what we are. We call ourselves Our Wee Country. You know, we're the Green and White Army, and we are just, we know that we will be shit 9 times out of 10 in our lifetime. We know that the Euros might be the last time we ever qualify, although I think we will qualify for the next Euros. We got good kids coming through. But turn it into a football podcast here. That'll really excite you both.
Keep going.
We'll hit that klaxon.
We have that underdog mentality. If England had that, we'd get back that mentality, which is it's a British and Irish mentality. Scots have it, the Welsh have it, the Northern Irish have it, the Southern Irish have it. England need it. Because England go into another World Cup now as dark horses. represented as the top table. They're
completely
not.
Agree.
Just the fans would reconnect with England if they would just in some way rediscover the island eccentricity that we have, that and this nation has. If they could rediscover that we'll fight them on the beaches, underdog mentality. It's what our nation's built on, whether you're Irish or British.
Yeah.
It's what we are. Yeah, we are an odd bunch.
We're big fans, as these Scroop, of UFC, and we're all old, well, boxers and God knows what. And that's our, you know, I grew up watching McGuigan and obviously still love watching Frampton and such. But I think to talk about UFC, I know you had, I want to talk about when you had Dan Hardy on because, I mean, it just...
He's one of the only times I got starstruck was meeting Dan Hardy. Yeah. How weird is that?
Like, see, because I'm not
DJs,
UFC
musicians,
right? Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? Yeah, so I had him around, was able to just treat him as like a... there's no such thing as not known. As a journalist, learn it before, you know.
True.
Of course you do. So I went in with the knowledge of what he did and how he came through and what the sports were. I'm not one of those ones... Look, if someone says a sport's rubbish, it's because they don't understand it. I don't like cricket, but it's a valid sport. I don't like Formula One, but it's a valid sport. It's a motor sport. It's not people just racing. It's not the best car wins every time. So same with USC. It's not the sport for me, but I understand the art to it. And when he came round, it was good for me in a way because it was like, I just listened to various podcasts he'd done in the States and found out about him taking the ayahuasca in the Peruvian Basin. And it was just what I needed at home to be. And that episode in a way, episode 2,
phenomenal,
made the series for me because it made me realise, actually, I will get very close to the same downloads of Dan Hardy talking about this as I will Jamie Carragher talking about winning the European Cup, you know?
He's a legend.
Well, my point being was, like, and I'm a big Dan Hardy fan, and you've got fighters like Dan Hardy, Michael Bisping, that, you know, were fighting for world titles, and the British fans liked them. Mm-hmm. Conor McGregor, just some young lad from Ireland, goes to America, and within two fights, look at the crowd.
Yeah.
That, you know, and that Irish following, just it was just different league.
Yeah,
and it is.
Because we don't have much. So, like, from the Northern Irish point of view, it's like we had McGuigan in 85, Dennis Taylor in 85, and Northern Ireland qualifying for the 86 World Cup. That all happened in the same year.
Who was in the 86 team then? Who was that then?
In the 86 team? Yeah. Norman Whiteside, and Colin Clark, Sammy McElroy still there.
Yep.
Ian Dowie was playing for us back then. Oh. But I thought we'd be like that all the time, so we qualified 82, 86, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right.
They were the two greatest years for sticker collecting. España 82, Mexico 86.
Italia 90 was bigger for me. I love that. Yeah, I love collecting those stickers as well.
Yeah.
I remember that.
You're about 5 years younger than me, so that figures,
Well, a bonus song then we have to throw in was when he won the title, Barry McGuigan, 85, Loftus Road.
Yeah.
I've always thought he didn't come in. By the way, he talked to people from Northern Ireland. Everyone went to that, right? Yeah. So he talked. And the thing about Barry McGuigan, because he's from Clonus, so he's from just outside Northern Ireland.
Cyclone.
Yeah. And his whole thing was leave the fight to Barry. So amazing guy. And Frampton's taken that mantle on of being that. Shame they've fallen out and all. But and his, so basically, Barry McGuigan, I had to like put my ear up. The speaker was researching it for I can't remember what reason. And my ear up, the speaker said, like, he's coming into Rocky. But you can't hear it because of the noise in the stadium. You can't hear his walk-on music.
Really?
Yeah. It takes him like 25 minutes to get the ring against Eusebio Pedrosa, 7 years unbeaten. Yeah. I remember that fight, every second of that fight. And that, I think that was the year I started to remember things. Yeah. I know it sounds weird, like 7, 8.
Yeah.
I don't really remember 82. I remember everything in 86. And his dad got in the ring and sang Danny Boy. Oh, and that's my grandest song as well.
Yeah.
Oh, man, what a moment that was.
Yeah.
Just wouldn't happen these days.
No.
You get Tyson Fury singing some daft song to his missus.
Yeah.
But that was amazing. So that's a bonus one.
Yeah, you can have that one. Honourable mention.
But the Sweet Caroline, the Northern Ireland fans singing that, has such more of a meaning to me.
Yeah.
Because it was just that you don't get a huge amount of credit for when you change and when things are better. People will look for that one thing. That's what tabloid media do.
Sure.
And it filters down in the local newspapers. And they've never had enough credit for it. And that Euros was brilliant because it was Northern Ireland fans and Republic of Ireland saying, hold on, this is what most of us are like.
Yeah.
This is what 99% of us are like now. We were at a bar in Paris, right? All around the edges bars, but 500 of us. And the flags that were up were like Shankill Road, and Sandy Row, East Belfast, Tully Carnet, all that. You know, every single area was Protestant. Every single area still is that was up. And everyone's just sitting having a drink, all relaxed. And a very, very drunk Republic of Ireland fan walked into a bar singing a song that back in the day, like if he had walked through a group of people of us singing that, and he's holding up the trickler and he's walking through, and one guy in the group went, what the fuck do you think you're, and literally the rest of us went, you sit down to our guy.
Yeah.
And we said, mate, come on over and have a drink, sat him down, and then we're like, don't be doing that in here, it's silly, you're just, you don't want to cause trouble, have a drink. And we sat with him for about 3-4 hours. That's the reality of what happens more times than not, but people only find the one. So I think anyone listening to this will know that like, I'd imagine most people listening to your podcast would not necessarily read those newspapers that spread hate and bile, and it's so easy to spread it, and it's so much more difficult to get positivity out.
Sure.
And the Euros, we did that. And that Euros, you go back and look at the newspaper coverage earlier on, it was like, where's the fight? Everyone was looking for fights. It started with a big cloud over it, and see, by the time it got to the quarterfinals, it was like, harmony. People were writing about Northern Ireland Republic. The social media helped amazingly. People got that message out that actually, look at this, look what real football fans are actually like. And I think that's really important because we still don't cover it, you know.
No, I think that's quite true, actually, Colin. And in researching for this, I started watching football fans and chants on just YouTube, and it was really cool. Pretty much all the ones you see, you just see thousands of people between 3 or 10, depending on what the size of the venue, just all singing in chorus, having a laugh, and just happy. And I've been to a couple of football matches, and I must say, I've only had positive experiences in the crowds. It has been like, oh, I get this. I understand why people come back to
this
time and
time again. But you'll
read about
the one bad
one. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And we have some funny songs. Like, I'm not saying the Northern Ireland fans, they've never been asked to become school teachers and preps. What do you call it? Preps? What do you call the head boys? We're always like back of the class still.
Yeah.
You know, and I... So, for example, they sing Kyle Lafferty's song. It's Kyle Lafferty, 7 foot, and he plays the flute. Kyle Lafferty's a ref, he's a flute player. It was funny. You know, or Chrissy Brunt. Chrissy Brunt is wonderful. Chrissy Brunt is wonderful. He's got a name that rhymes with Fanny. You know, we still sing that songs. You're like, oh, I can't believe we're... We are still silly, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The odd song's still a wee bit like, oh, yeah, but it's... It was never about like let's present something that we aren't. It was all about like let's actually be something different, you know. And that's really important.
I think the chant. I found a bunch of chants that I kind of like because I'm not that familiar with many football chants. But there's a few that I found online that just made me laugh. So I don't know, Colin. Would you recognise this one? And can you tell me who would sing it? Sunday, Monday, Habit Bay. Tuesday, Wednesday, Habit Bay.
Newcastle United fans.
Correct.
Sign up for him, yeah. That's a brilliant one.
That one just made me...
You want Liverpool one? I always get it the wrong way around. Yeah, but Jimmy Troy played for us. He's a Champions League winner. He's one of those players goes in the list of you won a Champions League. Yeah. Oh, my God. He was inspired that day. Remember, he back-heeled one off the line in Istanbul. But he made the biggest mistake, scored some amazing own goals, back heel own goal once. And his song was, I'll get the names wrong, but it was like, don't blame it on Ham. No, don't blame it on Biscan, don't blame it on Herman, don't blame it on Finan, blame it on Traore. He just can't control his feet.
That's brilliant,
love songs
mate.
I got.
That was my second one. So
no way.
yeah, look.
Yeah, but that's unbelievable. Right, yeah. Do you know what used to be better? Like, so the cop, there's a, which I would nearly put my list, but so there's good. The cop at Anfield singing She Loves You. When the Beatles were rising, they used to sing the Beatles songs. And there's no football in it. They're not singing it for any other reason. And they want to sing Beatles songs together. Yeah. And that's well worth watching.
Oh, yeah.
The whole cop, She Loves You, yeah. Swaying from side to side. Unbelievable.
That's beautiful.
I've got no memories of Arsenal songs when I used to go. My only memory is there was a guy called Rip Roar. And right. He'd wait for just this tiny little lull in the crowd. And he would just scream on his own, come on, you rip-roaring Reds. And he'd make such a big deal of it. And then the place would go mental. And it was like they were just waiting the whole 90 minutes for Rip Roar just to let it out once. But I've got no recollection of like...
1-0 to the Arsenal. That was the one. Some teams do have more songs than others. You know? I always wonder who comes up with them. You know, like you can't start a chant if you're not one of the guys that start a chant to this day.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone will have come up with a Mo Salah song. Someone will have come up with the Torres song, as Armband said he was a Red. Someone comes up with that, not us. Yeah. Not me. I'm not that guy. Yeah. If I had come up with that exact song, it wouldn't have been signed.
Die-hard fans singing there each week.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's cool. It's really good.
Yeah, any others?
I've got plenty. This one's just a chant. You're shish and you know you are.
Oh, who's that for?
It was sung by Chelsea fans at Stamford Bridge when their side played Galatasaray.
That's
Turkish
ridiculous.
Club.
We have a thing with Northern Ireland is we put whatever the cliched thing is of that country in. So like when we played Switzerland, it's you can stick your Toblerone up your own. You know,
but
you
a chance
can,
to
you can stick
so
your
funny.
Fancy sausage up your hole, like when we're in Germany. No matter who we play, I think Greece was you can stick your Aristotle up your hole. It's always the same, and then sideways. It's just fun. We'll do it in Costa Rica. I don't know what we're doing yet, but we'll do it in Costa Rica. Yeah, it's good humour.
They're just funny. I just think a lot of them are just so they're witty as well.
It's a drunken soiree in the Within. Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listing, the podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.